This podcast is provided by New St. Andrews College. For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu or come see us here in Moscow, Idaho for one of our prospective student weekends, September 21st and 22nd and October 26th and 27th. For more information about the college or prospective student weekends, visit us online at nsa.edu.
As we continue through the case for classical Christian education, we come to chapter 22, which is entitled, provocatively, School Close. I'll begin by saying that when Logos School started, we had the standard that the students had to be neat, clean, and modest. That was our approach, neat, clean, and modest. As time went on, we began to see that this was inadequate for reasons I'm going to get into shortly. And so we decided that we were going to adopt a school set of school clothes. You might call it, it's a little bit varied to be called a school uniform. It's not one uniform for everybody, but there's a range of school clothes where everybody matches. And we instituted this very gradually, actually, not because the students would have rebelled had we just imposed it on everybody, but I think the parents would have rebelled because many parents, when we founded Logos School, many of the parents that we were dealing with were products of the 60s. You know, all these, they were converted hippies, but they were hippies. And they... my Johnny can learn math with a, you know, in a sweatshirt. And what's your big problem with this? So what we did is we adopted school clothes for first grade, kindergarten and first grade, and then the next year it was second grade, and the next year third grade, and we just had it grow slowly up through the ranks, and now Logos has a school clothes policy. I want to talk a little bit here about why. So in this chapter, I say this: if an established school has had virtually no dress code or a negatively defined dress code, and that school tries to come around to school uniforms or clothes, there will likely be a controversy. Moreover, many of the objections will come from the parents and not the students. What might be called the casual imperative has established itself in the American mind as the ultimate desideratum. Whatever else you do in the morning when you dress, make sure you make yourself comfortable. Of course, we should dress for comfort, but the biblical view is that we should also dress for the comfort of others. Today, our natural tendency is to dress to suit ourselves. So, I just like to be comfortable is seen as a reasonable statement. Well, if you've ever spent any time in the supermarket watching someone shop for milk and Cheerios in their jammies, hair and rollers, and you know shuffling through the supermarket in their slippers, are they comfortable? Yes. Is everybody around them comfortable? No. They're dressing for comfort, all right, but it's their own comfort, as opposed to the way it used to be, where you thought you had to be presentable in order to put other people at their ease, to have other people feel oriented or situated. Now, when you adopt school clothes and you say something like, we would just like the students to look nice, you say something like that, that's an aesthetic judgment. That's an aesthetic evaluation. And this is an area where Christians need to be aware of the fact that aesthetics is the area where relativism is flooding into the Christian church. If you took the ancient triad of truth, goodness, and beauty, which all of which are attributes of God, truth, conservative evangelical Christians have generally done a good job retaining the concept of truth. If it's true that Jesus rose from the dead, if that's true today, then it's going to be true next week. The truth is objective. It doesn't move around. If it's sinful to get an abortion this week, it's going to be sinful to get an abortion next week. What's good remains good. What's true remains true. What's good remains good. But when it comes to beauty, many Christians have become relativists right along with the world. So if I were to say, for example, to take if I were to make an aesthetic evaluation, and I said to someone, you know that band of yours, that band you really like to listen to, that sounds like to me like a helicopter landing sideways on a tin bridge. You know, this is just cacophonous. It's just really bad. Now, I've just made an aesthetic evaluation. Now, if the person responds to my aesthetic evaluation with an aesthetic argument, let's say, and he comes back and says, well, I don't, the percussionist in that band graduated from Juilliard School of Music, and there's some complex rhythms going on here that I think are frankly above your head, and you haven't studied this issue carefully. The first thing I would do is shake that guy's hand because he's presenting an argument to me, an argument that assumes a standard, and that means he's arguing like a Christian. He's treating me like a Christian. He's behaving like a Christian. But that's almost always what does not happen. What happens is something more like, who's to say what good music is? Or that's just your opinion. Or I bet some of the bands you used to listen to are pretty bad too. And you know, so it's all up in the air. It's a who's to say sort of thing. So what does this have to do with school clothes? Well, remember you said, I think that looks nice. I think the students look nice. I think it's more disciplined, it's more orderly, etc. Well, who's to say? Who's to say what looks nice? And that's the kind of argument you will get, even from Christians. Now, I say this in this chapter, and this is an important paragraph with regard to aesthetics. When the Bible says that Abigail was a beautiful and intelligent woman, which it does in 1 Samuel 25:3, this means that there is such a thing as feminine loveliness. When it says that Abigail was a beautiful and intelligent woman, it doesn't give us her picture, and it doesn't give us her SAT scores. But we can derive from, we don't know what she looked like, but we know she was attractive, and we don't know how smart she was, but we know that she was smart. And that tells us that there is such a thing as beauty in women, and there is such a thing as intelligence in women. So, when the Bible calls us to sing a new song to God and to play skillfully with a shout of joy, that's Psalm 33:1, this means that there is such a thing as a skillful performance in music. If the Bible says play skillfully, then it must be possible to play skillfully. Such references, and there are many, are in themselves sufficient to show that aesthetic relativism is contrary to the Scriptures. But our specific subject is clothes, and more specifically, clothes in a school setting. So, the Bible tells us some interesting things. The Bible says Rebecca took Esau's choice clothes and put them on her son Jacob, Genesis 27:15. The city of Tyre trafficked in purple clothes and embroidered garments, Ezekiel 27:24. Achan was tempted by a beautiful Babylonian garment and not by a pair of sweats. Achan said, look at those flip-flops. I totally need those flip-flops. That's in Joshua 7:21. Ruth presented herself to Boaz in her best garments, Ruth 3:3. And such passages simply state what everybody in the world knows, as long as there's no debate about school clothes going on. Some clothes are better than others. Now, it's not the case that some clothes are better than others for absolutely anything. Because, for example, if I said, so what are your best clothes? And one person might have a tux in their closet. One person might have a suit. One person might say, well, I just have a jacket and tie. Those are my best clothes. We all know what is meant by your best clothes. You mean generally, what are your best clothes for going to a wedding? You know, or if you're invited to a wedding, what are your best clothes? But if I said, so if those are your best clothes, then those must be your best clothes for changing the oil in your car, right? Well, no, that doesn't follow. Your best clothes for a wedding are not necessarily your best clothes. In fact, they're emphatically not your best clothes for changing the oil in your car. If I said, what's a superior building, Salisbury Cathedral or a split-level ranch suburban house? Well, obviously, Salisbury Cathedral is a superior building. But then if I said, and which one's superior for watching Monday Night Football? Well, now it's the ranch house. It's more suitable. It's fitted for that function. Now, one of the things that we note is that uniforms are vocationally related. So you UPS drivers wear uniforms. McDonald's employees wear uniforms. Your favorite basketball team wears uniforms. If you really want a reaction, what you should do is take all the anti-uniform arguments that you heard and then apply it to your school's basketball team and have them oh, you can just wear a blue t-shirt and whatever kind you can come up with, and cutoffs are fine, gym shorts are fine, whatever. No, the players would insist on a uniform because they know that that's part of the discipline of the team, it's part of the ethos of the team, it's part of the direction of the team, it's part of the esprit de corps of the team. All of those things are true. Now, why is that not true for a math class? Why is that not true for schools as a whole? So I argue in this chapter that young people let me back up for a minute. It's true that James tells us not to make judgments about people based on their external appearance. And this is quite true, which is said in James 2, verses 2 and 3. Moreover, we should teach our students not to make such superficial judgments. And this is another compelling reason why the school should require a defined form of suitable school dress. Left to themselves, the students will establish their own informal dress code. This is another inescapable concept. It is not whether there will be a cultural enforcement. It's not whether there will be cultural enforcement of dress standards, but rather which standards will be applied and by whom. So, if you don't have the kids wear something into class, the kids are going to enforce it, and they're going to. If you're not going to say school shoes are these, then the kids are going to say school shoes are Nikes. And if you're not wearing Nikes, then you're a loser. And they will enforce it. So there will be some kind of conformity that's demanded. So I say later, young people today are desperately trying to vandalize the image of God that they carry about, despite themselves, in their bodies. God gave long hair to women as a glory and a covering, showing that the Lord is near. And yet bewildered and unprotected and lost women now cut their hair with hedge clippers and dye it bizarre colors. Why? Well, because these things matter. The reason people are doing all the body modification, body piercings, hair dyes, Halloween hair, the reason people are doing these things is because they matter. They don't do them because they don't matter. They matter. And so if they matter to them, it should matter to us, but it should matter to us as Christians. So I say modern evangelical Christians who have an eagle eye when it comes to imitating anything the world does are blind to why the world is doing it. Unfortunate souls are trying to develop a cultural form of dress that says, I am lost and hopelessly damned. And we have Christians who seriously want to imitate this or allow it into the hallways of Christian schools, saying all the while that we can make it mean something like, Christians are on the cutting edge too. So someone comes up with a form of dress that says, I'm a lost soul. I'm a forlorn puppy. And that's what the message of this dress is. And Christians want to adopt it, and they want it to mean not I'm a lost soul, but I'm a found soul. Well, sorry, you just can't do that. So actually, it just shows that we are terminally clueless. Imitators of the world's culture from within the church know everything about the world's culture except what it means. I once compared Christians copying the world's hairstyles, dress styles, jewelry styles, I compared that to a drunk Japanese businessman in a karaoke bar singing along to the Stones. And he knows everything about the song except what it means. He can sing it, he can imitate it, he can ape it, he can get all the nuances. He knows every nuances. He can get everything nailed about that song except what it's talking about. And Christians are that way. When we have this eagle eye for what the world is doing, when it comes to fashion, dress, the way you present yourselves, all of those things are worldview-laden issues. All of them are worldview. And we know everything about it except what it means. But that's why you have this classical Christian school. You don't want graduates of your school to share those same limitations.
I'm a 2009 graduate of New St. Andrews College, and I'm a commercial property manager.
Three kids at Logos, one at home still, and I do flowers on the side out of our house. When you have these little people that you're responsible to shepherd, you realize I need to know what I'm talking about because they need to have a firm foundation and they need deep roots so that they don't get blown over and that they're ready to stand up for the truth.
I am a programmer. The language aspect of NSA is a fantastic preparation for any sort of programming.
I'm a real estate broker here in town. I think absolutely the perfect education for being in sales of really any kind.
I actually put it to a lot of great use when I was working in the political realm.
I am a pastor in Central Coast, California. Whatever vocation you take, it'll make you take that seriously because you're seeing it through the lens of the sovereignty and lordship of Christ.
For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu.